Mysterious-ish.
Contains graphic and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
We did it. Episode 3. Hi.
Wow.
I feel like we really, every episode when we start these is just chaos.
It is.
It's either us like complaining or it's us singing. There's no in between. It's one or the other. So yeah, fact. Oh, I have been listening to a lot of Dateline. Like Dateline podcasts at work. And one of the episodes that I listened to today had some sheriff. First of all, most of the episodes I listened to were took place in Colorado. And I was like, okay, like, why is all of this happening in Colorado? What the fuck is going on there? But one of the sheriffs in one of the episodes was like, he had a lisp. And so all of his S's sounded like SH's. And so one thing he said was, given the circumstances, I was laughing the whole fucking time because I couldn't take him serious. He was talking like very seriously and I could not take him seriously because of his speech impediment. Maybe I'll bust out into that at some point because it just made me laugh really hard. And I know you shouldn't laugh at people's speech impediments, but he also had like a really thick Southern accent. And so it just like, which you're in Colorado. Why is your... Listeners, get at us. Do Coloradoan people have I don't know what they're called. Coloradoans? Coloradoan? Whatever. Do they have a Southern accent? Do y'all have a Southern accent? Because I need to know. Okay, thanks. Anyways, all right, so cults. Dateline and cults. I decided that I wanted to cover a cult that I have never heard of. But this one, I've never heard of it, but it's apparently pretty notorious. It was on like all of the little listicles that I read. So, but I've never heard of it. So there was a documentary released in December 2023 that detailed the cult, and it was called Born in Synanon. So the cult that I'm talking about today is called Synanon.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm probably going to... like blow past the word all of the time, so it's sorry. But I did use the documentary for some of my research along with some other online stuff. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's do this. So we begin our tale in 1958 with a man named Charles Diedrich. Charles, or Chick as he was known, lived in Santa Monica, California, and he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because he was a recovering alcoholic. So Synanon originally began as a drug rehabilitation program, and at this time, people who were suffering from drug addiction were not really allowed in Alcoholics Anonymous because at that time, it was believed that the struggles with drug addiction were different than struggles with alcoholism. It's not logical, but it was the 50s. So Chuck decided that he was going to make his own program. And along with alcohol, Chuck's drug of choice was LSD because it was the late 50s. And he said that the first time he used LSD, he, quote, saw Synanon right in front of him. Like he was having a fucking prophecy or some shit. Oh, yeah, it gets worse. So the group began as Tender Loving Care and only had a few followers. It was just like a group of humble people that were trying to keep each other honest and accountable and off drugs. So once there was a significant number of followers, Diedrich created the Synanon Foundation in 1958. So it seemed to have picked up speed rather quickly because He started this program in like 1957 or 1958. And then by 1958, he was already making a foundation out of it. No one really knows how or when the group transitioned from tender loving care to Synanon. But it's assumed that it comes from the words symposium and anonymous, and that people, like whoever said it, was just like slurring their words together. So the rehabilitation program was a 2-year program to start. But eventually, Chuck said, never mind, you can't graduate from drug addiction. And it became a lifelong thing. And we'll get into that later, because it gets fucking crazy. So this next part is going to sound very similar to the Nexium episode. In order to become a member of the Synanon community, you had to sit down with the Synanon leadership and be interviewed. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
But then you just had to quit using drugs, cold turkey. No weaning off, no like... what's that stuff called? Narcan, no like methadone, yeah. Nothing. You just fucking boom, done. Good luck, don't die. Yeah, you can't just quit hard drugs cold turkey. That's not how that works. That can lead to some literally deadly withdrawal symptoms. Mm-hmm. Cool. So on top of quitting drugs cold turkey, you also had to stop all contact and communication with friends and family outside the organization. Real culty. Mm-hmm. That was only for the first 90 days of the program. Like, you just had to cut contact with everyone for the first 90 days, which I'm not 100%. I don't get it, but whatever. While the program was a 1 to 2 year thing, it had 3 stages that were made to help members re-enter society. So stage 1 involved a lot of community work and like housekeeping, basically physical labor within the Synanon community. So you're living there and working there. The second stage sent members outside of the Synanon community to work, but they still lived within the community. And we'll talk about what sorts of work opportunities were there for some of these people. The third stage is where members were progressed to working and living outside of the Synanon community, but they were required to attend regular Synanon meetings. So now they're like being more... involved in the outside world, but also still attending meetings. Mm-hmm. This like that third stage really gives like standard AA, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the documentary Born in Synanon shows people having a blast and people boasting about how amazing Synanon was. I will say for the late 50s, early 60s, Synanon was extremely diverse. There were Black people, white people, men, women, young, old, like all walks of life in this community, we will call it for now. So they would also hold dances and fairs and like all sorts of events and shit. There were also a few categories of people who lived and worked for Synanon. Now, I want to make it clear, these are their terms. Not mine. Okay. So in their terms, Synanon referred to people as dope fiends and squares. And they're exactly what they sound like. So yeah, even if you weren't, it's fucking ridiculous. So even if you weren't struggling with substance abuse, you could still join Synanon and quote-unquote squares often joined Synanon for the community and for the like the belief system that they held. So far this all sounds fine and good, a little culty with the interview and the cease contact with family, but mostly good. They were like really just trying to help people with their drug addiction, but it started to get real bad real fast in 1968. This is like 10 years into the birth of Synanon. So they lasted with their helpfulness for a rather long time, but 1968 is really when the tender loving care goes full cult and morphs into Synanon. This is when Diedrich decided that a 2-year program wasn't going to do it. That drug addiction required, quote, lifetime rehabilitation. Even before the lifetime rehabilitation began, Chuck decided that if women were going to live in their community, then their children should also be there. So they bought another house for the children. This was off-site of their main living quarters. And the children were taken from their mothers and not allowed to be cared for by their mothers. Their mothers were only allowed to visit them. Here's a quote from the documentary from Chuck himself. Quote, "The most dangerous thing to do to a child in today's society is expose him on a day-by-day basis to his natural parents. Most parents today see their children as Barbie dolls, instruments for the satisfaction of their own neurotic needs, not as they are, young, wild animals that must be housebroken in order to survive in modern society." Unquote. Sir? I disagree. Disrespectfully, I disagree. Thanks. Mm-hmm. The most dangerous thing to do to a child in today's society is expose him to his natural parents. Who else is supposed to care for the child?
Right.
What in the fucking... This man, he's insane. And so, the drug rehabilitation program turned into an alternate society that focused on, quote, truth-telling. And this is where everything really starts to go downhill.
Oh, shit.
The women were required to shave their heads. The men were required to get vasectomies.
Oh.
Married couples were forced to break up and take new partners.
What?
Mm-hmm. And I will go into further detail about all of those things after I talk about this. Okay. So, one of the practices that Synanon adopted was called the game. So the game was a session in which a bunch of members of Synanon would sit in a circle, literally in a circle, and sing Kumbaya. No, I'm Stop. Kidding.
Okay, oh my gosh.
the brain waves are brain waving today. I wish I could tell you that all they did was sit in a circle and sing Kumbaya. Unfortunately, that is not fucking what would happen. So they would all sit in a circle and they would take turns speaking about themselves. And while one person was speaking, the entire rest of the group would harshly criticize them.
No.
The other members were encouraged. Mm-hmm. The other members were encouraged to be highly critical of everything and just be absolutely horrible to their peers. So, like, my worst fucking nightmare. You know, I don't want to sit in a circle and talk about myself and be criticized. Thanks, though. So the members were expected to leave the game and be friendly and supportive. So, like, there were no rules in the game except, like, you can't get out of your chair. You can't fight anybody, like, physically fight anybody. But you could say anything. But this practice is known as something called attack therapy, which is exactly what it sounds like. Exactly what it sounds like. Attack therapy.
No.
I have no fucking idea what the thought process behind that is or why anyone would think it would be successful. Think about, like, when you have been criticized or attacked for, like, a specific behavior that you have. When that has happened to me, I don't, like, fix it and magically become a better person. I, like, have anxiety about exhibiting that behavior and I shut myself off or stop communicating entirely. It doesn't fix it. You can't approach someone like that. It's not, it doesn't fucking work. Sorry about it. It doesn't fucking work. Mm-mm. So you remember how I said that they brought their children with them?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The kids were expected to participate in the game too.
Excuse me.
During school. So in the documentary, they show like clips of the like adults and also the children playing the game. And when I tell you that there was one girl who was sobbing, like fully fucking sobbing, and this other little girl across the circle was calling her a spoiled little bitch and telling her that she was they're like 9. And this little girl is getting called a spoiled little bitch. What?
That breaks my heart.
It's horrible. It's fucking horrible. So, okay. Soon, the game turned into something called the trip. Participants were sleep deprived for 48 hours.
Jesus.
They were not allowed to sleep for 2 fucking days.
No.
And then there was a game session where, quote, you were expected to be even more forthcoming about sharing your secrets. They sleep deprived them and then expected them to be more vulnerable and have more clarity on issues. I don't understand the logic there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense, but welcome to the cult, I guess. And then the best part, the game turned itself into a fucking podcast.
No.
Yeah, bro. They set up their own radio frequency and broadcast the session so that other Synanon members could pick up any telephone on Synanon property and hear the games. But they could also speak to anyone else on the line. So, like, it's like gameception. They could, like, be listening to the game happening somewhere else, but also having their own game on the fucking phone. I can't. And this like thing that they set up, this radio frequency broadcast, obviously they could also pick it up on, you know, radios, but this is how it was called The Wire. And this is how Chuck would communicate with like all of Synanon, because at one point there were like 1,000 people in this cult spread out throughout the different areas. I can't think of the word that I'm trying to think of, but we'll get to those in a little bit too. So for Synanon, the game served 2 purposes. One, it was their primary form of therapy, which makes no fucking sense, but we're not going there. It also served as a way to gather members' opinions on the leaders of the group, because in the game, there was no hierarchy. Everyone had to be criticized at some point. And so like the lowest people could, you know, like the quote unquote dope fiends that have just entered into this community could rag on Chuck Diedrich, the fucking highest man in the whole thing. Like they could talk shit about him and yell at him and scream at him and tell him that he sucks and whatever. So it was their way of gauging where their members were and what their members thought about certain members of leadership. So the game, of course, led to some horrific peer pressure in the worst fucking way. The game was used to peer pressure people to submit to Diedrich's will, quote unquote, abort pregnancies, undergo vasectomies, and commit violence. We'll get to the abortion and the vasectomies and the haircutting and the violence. We'll get to all of that. But I just prepare yourself, because it gets really fucking bad. So there were a couple of things that Synanon did to earn money, because they couldn't just, you know, survive. They're also buying like all of these fucking plots of land. They had like a ranch. They had like a broken down hotel, an abandoned hotel in Santa Monica, like right on the fucking beach. They had like this other house. They had, it was insane. So they had to be making money. So they opened some Texaco gas stations and ran those. And this is where like some of the second stage people would be placed to work. So they're working outside of Synanon, but also sort of for Synanon. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they also had a group of people called hustlers who would go to businesses and tell them what Synanon was doing and ask for donations. They would get, you know, monetary donations, money, as well as goods and services. They had so many fucking donations from food companies to Adidas. They were like, Adidas was donating tennis shoes by the fucking ton. And furniture. People were donating furniture and clothing and all sorts of shit just being completely donated, because what Synanon was doing in the beginning was good. It was good.
Oh,
and people wanted to help. And then it was not good very quickly. So the Synanon headquarters started in a small abandoned armory on the beach. But in 1967, they purchased a beachside hotel in Santa Monica called the Club Casa Del Mar. And this Club Casa Del Mar would become the headquarters and residence for members undergoing treatment. They would later purchase another building in Oakland, California, to be transformed into another residential facility. And they also had a ranch in Tomales Bay, California, like they were the fucking Manson family. What? In like this, the ranch was literally a commune, like literally a commune. It had a school. It had a like grocery store. It had a chow hall. It all of the things that you find in a fucking commune. It had. It was a commune. And then something happened called the Dirty Double Dozen. Gary McDaniels, a man who was in Synanon, he was one of the higher-ups, he was in charge of the, quote, hustlers, which were the people who would go and ask for donations. And they were found to be skimming some off the top. So they would be taking food, clothes, money, furniture, whatever they could sneak out. So Chuck had them brought to him, who was living in Tomales Bay, the Tomales Bay Ranch, and he ripped them all new assholes. The documentary showed one of the guys holding a sign that said, "Beware, I bite the hand that feeds me." And he was just expected to like sit in front of people while Chuck ripped him a new asshole while wearing this sign. So these were all directors of Synanon, like really, really high up people. So Chuck sent them back to the bottom of the totem pole. And what this means in Synanon terms is they were, you know, removed from their post. They had their jobs taken from them. They were replaced and they had to shave their heads again. Because what happens when you enter Synanon to show that you are like the lowest of the low, you are first beginning your treatment, your whatever. To begin with, it was to show like I'm starting treatment. But as it progressed through time, it was a form of punishment and to show that you fucked up, basically. So they had to shave their heads and lost their job, lost their status, lost everything, which I don't disagree with. You know, the punishing of them, but the punishment was a little brutal. I think if you're stealing, it's like embezzling. If you're stealing from the company that you work for, you have to be punished. Like, right. You can't just get away with that, whatever. But he took it too fucking far.
Mm-hmm.
So by 1964, Synanon was, so this was even before they had purchased a lot of their buildings and stuff. So by 1964, Synanon was a subject of a legal investigation due to its lifetime rehabilitation practices. This did not align with therapeutic norms, and it was believed that Synanon was running an illegal medical clinic. Cool. So it was also believed that they were building things without permits, like a fucking airstrip, which casual, how the fuck did they get a plane? But
no shit.
They had also created a trash dump, which is illegal because they're sectioned in specific areas for a fucking reason. It's fine. So the question of paying taxes arose, to which Diedrich claimed that Synanon was tax exempt due to being a religious organization.
No.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. So then they tried their hand at delinquent teenager reformation. They created a literal fucking boot camp and put ads in newspapers. Quote, Synanon seeks tough juvenile delinquents.
No.
Why, you ask?
Mm-hmm.
Because the state gave Synanon money for housing these troubled children.
Oh my God.
Sort of like foster care, but with manual labor and verbal abuse. It was literally like the fucking army. Like these kids were basically put in basic training. They had to wake up at 4:30 in the morning. Their beds had to be made. They had to run and do push-ups and like push-ups for punishment. They were forced to exercise all fucking day long. They were like running, doing all these chants. It's shit you see in basic military training.
Right.
It's fucking outrageous. So, obviously, other legal issues, such as violence and wrongful imprisonment of these fucking children, began to arise. Children who had been assigned to Synanon by, like, the state or whatever, began running away via an underground railroad situation.
What?
Like, it was the fucking 1860s to reunite with their parents. I can't. What is happening? Anyone who opposed or left the group would be captured and beaten in Synanon's basements, obviously. Also, the schools kept something called corporal punishment logs, where the teachers, which they called them demonstrators, would write down the child's name, the date, the punishment, and the reason. And these were not typical schoolhouse punishments. They were not like, child didn't listen, wrote 15 sentences. No. One of the guys on the documentary, he said, I don't want to call it punishment. It was abuse. One of the punishments on the corporal punishment log and the reason was listed as, quote, pushed children down for not doing as told. Pushed them down?
Bruh.
J'excuse? Hello? What the fuck are you doing? Who pushes a child down for not listening? What the fuck? I cannot. So, yeah, it's really fucking sad. So I will say that, obviously, I said in the beginning that the first two episodes-ish of the documentary were just people being like, yeah, Synanon was great. Like, everything was really fun, and I felt like I had a home, and I was finally clean for the first time in decades, and like I was providing this life for my children. Everything was really great. So don't be fooled if you watch this documentary. It's on Paramount Plus. Don't be fooled by the first two episodes. It gets really fucking dark. Really fucking dark. So Synanon also had a special forces situation with a group called the Imperial Marines. Of course. This is the group that carried out much of the violence that was initially discouraged by Diedrich. But Diedrich quickly changed his mind on violence when he discovered just how much power it would earn him. Now, Diedrich ordered mass beatings that hospitalized teenagers and ranchers, like nearby ranchers who would house the runaways. And the ranchers were beaten in front of their families just mercilessly. So one ex-member named Phil Ritter was beaten so severely that his skull was fractured and he fell into a coma after developing a deadly case of bacterial meningitis.
Jesus.
Yeah. But what really had happened was that he was kicked out of Synanon because he told local authorities, like the sheriff, about the mass vasectomies that were going on, which we'll get to. And the attorney, the sheriff told the attorney, and the attorney just so happened to be in Synanon. And Synanon, or that attorney, went to Chuck Diedrich. And Diedrich said, leave. So Then he tried to get custody of his child, who was still in Synanon with the child's mother, and then he got the shit beat out of him. So because he dared to oppose, he was kicked out. And because he dared to take one of these children from this cult, he got the shit beat out of him and nearly died.
Jesus.
Also, I feel that I should mention that I just want you guys to understand how shitty of a person Chuck Diedrich really was. Diedrich used his $600,000 settlement that he won against Hearst Newspapers. Do you remember Hearst Newspapers? Patty Hearst?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking largest newspaper company at the time. He won a $600,000 settlement against them for libel, defamation, basically. It's the same shit that Amber Heard sued Johnny Depp for. Johnny Depp sued Amber Heard for. Anyways, so he used the $600,000 to buy gold coins for the higher-ups in Synanon. And where did these gold coins come from?
Yeah.
South Africa. And what's wrong with that? Mm-hmm. Well, this is the 1970s, aka apartheid times. And Chuck's wife was black. What the fuck, sir? Your wife is black and you are buying gold coins from people who are literally slaughtering black people by the thousands.
If you carry the three at the two, doesn't make sense.
No, it fucking doesn't. What is wrong with this man? I can't. Well, okay, so then his wife died of lung cancer.
Oh.
Uh-huh. It was really fucking sad. And everybody in the documentary talked, her name was Betty, and so they called her Betty D because Betty Diedrich. So they called her Betty D, and everybody loved Betty D. They were so like, she was the heart and soul of this group. And when she died, that's when Chuck got really, really fucking mean. And so here we go. This is also when they did something called changing partners. 300 couples got divorced and were found new partners.
My God.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. Because this man said, oh, well, I found happiness in another woman, so maybe everybody else should. And so he forced everyone to get a fucking divorce and find a new partner. And most people were pissed about it. Can you imagine?
No.
Horrifying. So, of course, after this and the mass vasectomies, a lot of people left Synanon. So I keep mentioning the mass vasectomies, and I thought they were in my notes, but they're not. I can't fucking find it. So basically what had happened was, so after they decided, Chuck eventually decided that, you know, having children was too expensive to raise these children that he so badly wanted and then removed from their mothers and fathers. This is where the games start coming in. People, women who would fall pregnant worth being forced to have abortions. And so in turn, some of the men were like, well, wait a minute. Why are we putting this all on the women? We should just get vasectomies because then the women don't have to worry about birth control or getting abortions, which is very valid, except for the fact that it's still your fucking body and you should be able to say what you're doing with it.
Right.
So I think it said like about 400 men went in a single weekend and got vasectomies.
A single weekend.
Yeah. A single weekend. They all went. Yeah. Yeah. So, and some people were like gung-ho for the vasectomies. Like, hell yeah, let's do this. This is, you know, part of the community. I want to help my community. I want to, you know, make sure that these women aren't suffering, whatever, which is, again, very, very valid. I respect it, but you shouldn't have had to.
Right.
So I don't, it's just whatever. So then an attorney named Paul Marantz made the mistake of winning a lawsuit against Synanon on behalf of the people that they had wrongfully imprisoned. Mm. So two Synanon members took a fucking rattlesnake and put it in Marantz's mailbox.
Ayo.
The snake had its rattle removed, so it couldn't make a sound and warn Marantz. So, of course, he got bit and was hospitalized for 6 fucking days. And that was in 1978. So 6 weeks after the snake thing, the LAPD searched the ranch in Badger, California, and found a recorded speech of Diedrich. Now, the speech gets pretty fucked up. Just warning you. He says, quote, "We are not going to mess with the old-time turn-the-other-cheek religious postures. Our religious posture is, don't mess with us. You can get killed dead, literally dead. These are real threats. They are draining life's blood from us and expecting us to play by their silly rules. We will make the rules. I see nothing frightening about it. I am quite willing to break some lawyer's legs and next break his wife's legs and threaten to cut their child's arm off. That is the end of that lawyer. That is a very satisfactory, humane way of transmitting information. I really do want an ear and a glass of alcohol on my desk. Sir, are you okay? Do you have a brain tumor? Have you absolutely fucking lost it? I'm channeling my inner TikTok right now. Be so fucking for real right now. Are you stupid? Hello? Sir, pull your head out of your ass. What are you thinking? I cannot. They showed a little bit of that speech on the documentary, and he was transmitting that speech through the wire. So everybody was fucking hearing this. And so he's just like continuing this brainwashing bullshit. I promise I'm almost done. I'm sorry. This episode is so fucking long, but there was just so much shit on this fucking cult. It's insane. So Synanon took so many legal actions against San Francisco newspapers and news channels as they discussed the bullshit that Synanon did. Time magazine wrote an article on Synanon titled, quote, "Life at Synanon is swinging, probably due to the changing partners thing." And they also described it as a kooky cult.
Kooky.
A kooky cult. I love the alliteration. So Synanon sued the Time fucking magazine. They sued Time magazine for $76 million.
Stop.
They fucking lost because, duh, what do you mean? You take this to a jury and they're going to look at the article, read the article and all of the shit that they have in the article. And then they're going to look at the evidence that you are a, quote, kooky cult and fucking say, no, you don't get any money, you dumbass. You are a kooky cult. Hello?
You are a kooky cult.
One small newspaper titled Point Reyes Light was the smallest paper to ever win a Pulitzer Prize due to its reporting on Synanon. Mm. And this small newspaper actually won a $100,000 settlement against the cult because of, you know, freedom of the press and whatnot. So we're getting into the downfall, okay? And it's a very fast downfall. I mean, like, Betty D died, and then it was just like, lawsuit, 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 done. Lawsuit, 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 arrest, done. That was it. So, Chuck Diedrich, was arrested in 1978. So, this was, like, probably 2-ish, maybe 3 months after the snake incident. And he was arrested for conspiring to commit murder. And because doctors claimed that his health would lead him to die in prison, he was sentenced to probation.
Oh my.
One of the conditions of his probation, however, was that he could not manage Synanon any longer. So he was just like gone, out of there. Not allowed to fucking touch it with a 10-foot pole or you will be, I don't know, punched in the fucking face. You will have a snake put in your mailbox, bitch.
Yeah.
Also, The IRS revoked the cult's tax-exempt status and said, by the way, you weren't tax-exempt for all of these prior years. And so now you owe $17 million in back taxes. So the cult was officially bankrupt and therefore dissolved in 1991. But I don't really understand why it took that long to fully dissolve. I think there were a couple of holdouts who were like hanging on and trying to hold on to what the group originally stood for. But that was long gone and Chuck was long gone. So I don't know why it took that long to dissolve. But 1991. So we went from 1958 to 1991.
Damn.
Yeah. And then Chuck Diedrich died after a series of strokes on February 28th, 1997. Just days before your birth.
Wow.
Wow. And fucking bye, Chuck, you dumb bitch.
Bye.
Fucking with your messed up thought processes. And it started out real wholesome. Like, it started out so good. And then he just, like, got power hungry and fucking down the fucking toilet. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, holy shit. I'm sorry. That was a long-ass episode.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that cult either.
No. Apparently, it's pretty notorious. But it could also just be, like, gaining that traction because of the documentary that was released in 2023.
Wow. Right.
But I don't know. Anyways, so, yeah. What are your thoughts? Yeah.
F that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy. It's back.
It's not a... So, like, after he passed, it's not a thing anymore, right?
Correct.
Or is it... Okay.
Cool. No. It dissolved. So, he died in 97, but it, like, officially dissolved in 1991.
Okay.
So, but I think they were forced...
For sure. If, like, maybe somebody brought it back and they're like,
yep. Yep.
Or if somebody brought it back and was like, actually, we're going to do what it was supposed to be.
I wish they would, because, again, it was the 60s, like the 50s and 60s. And they were, like, so many people on the documentary said, like, racism, not a thing. Not a thing in Synanon. That's how it should be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then we get into, like, the game and the peer pressure and the wire, how he's, like, transmitting all of this information to people, is, like, brainwashing people. It just gets really fun. And then the violence, the snake, hello?
Yeah, that's wild.
I cannot. I can't. It's fucking insane. Wow, I'm really glad to have this out of my brain, because it's been, like, I started researching on Sunday, and then I watched that whole 4-part documentary, and so it's just, like, been in my brain for 4 days.
Oh, goodness.
And I'm just done with it. I'm just glad to have it out.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Anyways, that's that on that.
That's that.
That's that on that. All right, listeners, we will catch you guys next week. Bye.
Goodbye forever.
Thank you for listening to Mysterious-ish. All episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast directory. Follow us on social media at Mysterious-ish Pod. If you have topic suggestions, questions, or stories to share, you can email us at mysteriousishpod@gmail.com. Or visit our website at mysteriousishpod.com. Make sure to come back next week for another discussion about the mysteries of the universe.